Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that kiss. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, not in a creepy way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the probably one of the most timely movies we have, except for John Wick 3, and that is Knives Out. 2019, directed by Rian Johnson. Ryan Johnson.
Ryan.
Rian.
We'll call him R. RJ, our dog.
Rian Johnson, a huge fan of podcasts.
Is he?
He's married to a prolific podcaster.
Who's he married to?
Karina Longsworth.
Okay.
I think she does the You Must Remember This podcast.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm familiar with her.
I might have butchered her.
I thought Rian Johnson is married to Paul F. Tompkins?
Pretty close.
Did you see that Paul F. Tompkins has a new podcast?
No. What?
It's he and his wife, and it's called Stay F. Homecast. And they just chit chat. But it's interesting to hear her because I'm so used to hearing his voice. You know, and they seem to be sort of opposite personalities, which is cute. Her family is Lebanese and North Carolinian, I think, or maybe Kentuckian. So she has a strange accent.
And what is the general topics of discussion on their podcast?
You know, just being having to stay home. So, you know, what you can't really go out and do much. So we'll just stay home and chit chat about what we do when we stay home. Like they talked a little bit about binging series, like what they're watching. And they told some, you know, like family stories. And I don't know how long we'll do this. Hopefully not very long, but maybe once a week for the length of however long we're going through this pandemic. By the way, for those listening to this much further in the future, I hope you're doing well. I hope this is ancient history.
That's such an optimistic statement, listening to this much further in the future.
Yeah. But we are in week two, although maybe reality week one of global pandemic USA.
Recording on March 20.
I don't think it can be global and USA.
Well,
I'm just saying.
But we're week two. The timing is us.
The US is now participating in the global pandemic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Much like soccer, they got in late. And also, we're not real good at it.
Even Norway's dunking on us. Maybe it was Finland.
You know, this is all going to seem very, like, trite. But since we're going through it at the moment, and the three of us haven't had a conversation together since this actually really began. I mean, we talked a little bit about it 2 weeks ago. But last week, I was sort of kicking myself for not at least jumping on for housekeeping. Because it turns out we had family stuff to talk about as well. But, yeah, this has been weird. Drew, you're working mostly from home?
Exclusively from home.
Yeah. And Jason, you can't work from home.
That is correct.
And I can't work from home. But I was telling Drew before we started, you know, people I know are that I work with are kind of changing their like Facebook avatars, or, you know, you can put like filters on them or whatever for special events. And they've been putting the, you know, 911, the first responder, blah, 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 you know. So, yeah, we don't get to stay home, blah, blah, blah. And yet, I was telling Drew, you know, I don't really try. I try not to talk about work on social media as much as possible, although I'm certainly proud of what I do. But B, I'm also a little embarrassed about having a job. And I'm also a little embarrassed about my first week during pandemic first responderness was actually probably less work than a normal week. because people on stay put or hunker down or whatever we're calling it, depending on where you live, you know, less car accidents. If bars and restaurants aren't open, you don't have bar restaurant problems. You know, still plenty of thefts and fights and stuff, but you know, it hasn't been all that bad. And knock on wood, none of us are real sick. So
that we know of.
Well, yeah, for the moment. I don't know. I don't know if that's a failing in my character, but it's like, yeah, I don't want to brag too much at this point. Cause I feel horrible for everybody who in the service industry all over the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if your job is in the service industry, you're kind of fucked for a while. So
yeah,
this will be probably a little bit loosey goosey. Cause I don't know how much of this movie we want to really spoil for people.
I wouldn't spoil very much of it.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, I want to
spoil it all.
Burn it down.
No, I'm honestly, how are we going to talk about it if we're not going to spoil it?
Okay, well, we at least need to warn people. Like, if you haven't seen the movie, go see the movie. Because seriously, go see this movie. Go watch it. Stop.
It's a great movie. But also, what kind of psychopath searches out a movie podcast to listen to people talk about a movie they haven't seen yet? If they're going to get upset about it being spoiled.
That's true. You're right.
Okay, cue the angry letters right now.
Oh, we'd welcome any letters, really.
Yeah, both of them.
Yeah, well, and that's why in the notes, there's always a time code for when housekeeping starts. So
people can just skip to it.
Yeah, if you want to skip to it, that's cool. If you just want to hear
Anderson's family. All right, so spoiler alert, jump to the end or shut your yap.
Who put this on the list? Drew, you put this on the list?
I think this is originally you, but seconded and voted on by me and Jason for sure.
Yeah. Because I wasn't even supposed to be on this week.
Oh, yeah. No, we need to all be on. I was telling you, you know, if this whole thing gets any of us like either particularly busy or flustered or something, there's, you know, the podcast is certainly secondary to our own mental and physical health. However, like I at least wanted to have a conference call with you guys because I'm so used to talking to you guys about stuff. So I would
miss right now I need a break from reality, and as much as we're talking about things that are real, this is my break from, you know, scrolling through CNN and scrolling through my work laptop and fielding text messages and emails from employees. So sometimes a couple hours of respite like this is restorative.
Oh yeah, definitely. And as much as I'm an addict of the news, like I love news, I love breaking news. So, but you know, much like 9/11, after a while, it gets to you, so you got to distance yourself. At least I find that I do.
Yeah, 6 feet.
Well, and of course, luckily, my family at home doesn't allow me to watch the news anyway. So I watch mostly Guy Fieri shows. Say Yes to the Pimple, whatever.
Ew.
Yeah.
So I already showed you that bowl I found, right?
Yes.
I don't know if you're going to be able to see this, but I just notice this is on the wall over there.
Vanisher, I will get you.
Yes. What is happening?
So Drew sent us a picture of a paper bowl that when you turned it over said, what, like, you'll never find me?
Yeah, no, it was over like that when I found it.
Oh, okay.
The calls are coming from inside the house. You were,
it's so cool. So creepy. You will never find me. So my family's doing great in lockdown.
This is a little bit of The Shining going on.
All work and no play. Okay, so instead of doing alphabetically, we'll do it, I don't know. So
not halfway.
Brother Jay.
Yes.
When did you see this movie for the first time? I'm up guessing
about
this week.
About 3.5 hours ago.
Yeah, me too. And how did you enjoy it?
I liked it very much. I liked it better. I liked the second half better than the first half.
Fair enough. Brother Drew?
I loved it. I loved everything about it. I watched it for the first time this week. Yeah, it was very enjoyable. I love the cast. I love the story. I love the whole vibe of it. It was fantastic. It was exactly what I needed this week.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
It was just fun. This is a really fun movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun. It's not heavy lifting, but it's a mystery, like an Agatha Christie type tale.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's both like a really traditional mystery and also a parody of mysteries all wrapped into one.
Yeah, with an all-star cast.
Yes.
Or a most star cast.
It was quite the ensemble cast, but also it drew in enough of a story that had an outside universe. So it was kind of a mix between like an Agatha Christie and Clue.
Yes. And they actually reference Clue in the movie.
Yeah. So it actually made me a little nostalgic and makes me want to go watch Clue again. But that's never difficult for me. I can watch that all the time. But
I think we actually owe Travis a Clue podcast.
Have we not done Clue yet?
We did, but we talked mostly about Murder by Death. And then we did a Murder by Death podcast.
Well, we could do a Clue Redux. Do it proper.
A Clue Redo?
Mm-hmm. And invite Mr. Dr. Wonders on.
Yeah. He probably needs a respite from life right now.
Well, he's banished to work from home, so.
Yeah. This is actually a great movie to escape to Fantasyland. If you're stuck at home and you have the ability to stream this movie in some way, I think there's lots of streaming. I don't know if this is available on one of them but there's lots of streaming services that are offering like the extended 30-day trial membership. So if you're not like, you can get Showtime for 30 days for free, as long as you remember to cancel. And I think Acorn TV for British programming and Stars has a bunch of stuff for free. And Sling, which is Dish Network, has some stuff for free. So. Anyway, so if you could stream this movie, Knives Out, or buy a physical copy, if there's a store near you that's still open that would sell you a physical copy, I thought it was great, too. I thought it was, as Drew said,
That's exactly what I said.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, dear God. Yeah, no, it's what I needed to this week. And as Jason said, it's very comfortable. It's a very...
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of story that the story itself is well crafted and well told and draws you in a way that it's back and forth in the timeline, but in such a way that it's playful enough that it feeds you enough breadcrumbs to keep you intrigued. But I wasn't able to guess all the way to the end, which is always excellent.
Yeah, me too.
So,
well, because it's seemingly gives away the mystery right in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of becomes a sort of comedic thriller about whether or not they're going to get away with it.
And that's what makes this movie work, is all the comedy. Because the characters are slightly over the top. So you're not really taking them too seriously. So the plot itself doesn't have to be perfectly serious. Although it does involve, you know, murder and whatnot, intrigue.
The moment I saw that Don Johnson and Jamie Lee Curtis were purportedly married in this film as a couple, I was absolutely like, I'm in.
Don
Johnson was so great.
Oh, exactly. I had a revelation. I may be a Don Johnson fan. No, he was great. I forget how good he is. And Jamie Lee Curtis is always good. And Michael Shannon is great. And Toni Collette, oh my God. Toni Collette was basically playing Gwyneth Paltrow, which is funny. She's fantastic. And then the police guys, Lieutenant Elliot, Lakeith Stanfield, who I didn't dig into where we know all these people from. What's Lakeith Stanfield been in before?
He was in Get Out.
Oh, okay. And then Trooper Wagner, Noah Segan, don't know him either, but they're kind of sort of opposite, but both sort of...
he's known for being in a bunch of Rian Johnson movies.
Oh, okay. you have like, okay, so here's the basic setup, is you have a wealthy crime novelist, Harlan Trombley. All these names are great. The house, the setting of the house, you know, it, when the movie opens and you pan up the front of the estate toward the house, and then you kind of go in the house and see a bunch of the rooms and stuff. It's like, first of all, the first thing I thought is, well, okay, great. It's another beautiful movie. We live in good times for beautiful movies. I don't know if it's digital cameras or whatnot, but it just, the colors are gorgeous. It's just a beautiful, the lighting is perfect.
Yeah. You felt like you were there.
Well, and in particular, Rian Johnson movies, he really uses just beautiful establishing shots.
So he's known for the Last Jedi.
Last Jedi, The Brothers Bloom, Brick, Looper. Mm.
Yeah, it's, so I was instantly, you know, happy to enter this world. And it's so over the top. And it's so well done as far as introducing the crime novelist. Even before you see him, you kind of get a sense of who this person is. And then, like, just the whole, like, art piece with all the knives on it. That is such
ridiculous.
It's such a big part of the background of the movie. And, it's completely ridiculous. But it fits into the overall house. I mean, it's perfectly mm-hmm. situated because this guy's a crime novelist, so there's all sorts of, you know, weapons and tchotchkes and knickknacks all over the place. And he's super wealthy, so. Anyway, so Harlan Trombley is Christopher Plummer. He is, he just had his 85th birthday, and he is, like, wealthy as shit. And he's got all these adult family members that are, their family comes together instantly. By the way, when, was it, it was Toni Collette who was dancing?
Mm-hmm.
Did that remind you of Creepshow when Ed Harris was dancing?
Yes.
Instantly I thought, oh my God. Anyway, so in order that you see them, we see the housekeeper Fran, played by Edie Patterson. Don't know where she's from, but she was fine. Let's see. We meet Richard, who is Don Johnson, who is Harlan's son-in-law. Harlan's daughter is Linda, Jamie Lee Curtis. And they have a son, Ransom, who is Captain America. Chris Evans, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we find out in quick order that, first of all, Linda, I forget what Linda does, but she's a self-made woman. She got $1 million loan from her dad to start the business, but, you know, so she has a successful business of some sort. And then her husband, Richard, Don Johnson, turns out he's cheating on her. And then Ransom is like he's a Jared Kushner type. Well, I don't know. Maybe the other kid is more Jared Kushner. Anyway, Ransom is the slightly older than college age kid, rich kid who's never really had a job and, has a punchable face.
My wife would severely disagree with you about that.
Oh, no, he's a very handsome man. But we have Joni, who is Harlan's daughter-in-law. Harlan's son that she was married to is deceased. Joni is Toni Collette. And again, she is Gwyneth Paltrow. She has what do they call it?
She's like an unsuccessful version of Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah. I forget what her version of Goop is, but it's
she's funny. An influencer.
Yes. And she has some sort of
flam or something.
Yes, exactly. Yes, flam. Something like that. She's got a college age daughter, Megan, Catherine Langford, and I probably should know her from somewhere, but I don't. She's the
Netflix.
Netflix?
Mm-hmm. Isn't she the suicidal or the committer of suicide on 13 Reasons Why?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. She's the new equivalent of Evan Rachel Wood or Catherine Isabel, one of those. But she's great. Don't get me wrong. She doesn't have a big part, so it's no big deal. Then we have the youngest son of Harlan, Walter, Michael Shannon. And he runs the family publishing company by which he basically manages dad's books, but the sales of dad's novels. But dad, Harlan, doesn't license out any of his novels to movies or anything. So, which is where the real money is. So, Walter's job is not all that heavy lifting. And no. Maybe not even super lucrative, but whatever. And, of course, Walter's wife is Donna, played by Ricky Lindholm, comedian, half of Garfunkel and Oates. And then their son, Jacob, the Nazi child, is Jaden Martell, who I think we should know from someplace, but I don't know.
Was he in The Last Jedi? I think the official title is he's an alt-right troll dipshit.
I laughed so hard when Daniel Craig says, and the Nazi child masturbating in the bathroom.
Exactly. We have this 85th birthday, which happens off camera. And then we have Harlan, who is found dead by Fran the maid in his study, ostensibly of a suicide. He slashed his own throat, but... the police.
This has to be the funniest movie ever that starts with somebody slashing their own throat.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I could name another.
And the police are pretty much convinced it's a suicide. It's not, you know, it's pretty much cut and dried. Trooper Wagner, the young white guy, he is overly impressed by Harlan Trombley and the family. Has a super smile on his face, is whatever. And then we have Lieutenant Elliot, Lakeith Stanfield, who is a little more serious, but, you know, he's happy to have this all buttoned up as well. But an experienced private eye, Benoit Blanc, Daniel Craig, who at first, and when I saw the ads for this movie and I heard the Daniel Craig Southern accent, I thought, oh no. But it worked. He pulled it off.
I think one of the funniest things is I believe Ryan Johnson said when he wrote the script, he described Benoit Blanc as having a slight Southern accent.
And I love the dialogue in this movie is pretty great because, you know, the players are sniping at each other all the time. The family members are. But they're doing it and so they're referencing things that as the audience you're thinking. Like they're calling Daniel Craig out on his Kentucky Fried Chicken accent.
Yeah, they called him CSI KFC.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So it's unclear why he's even there, but he is apparently a very renowned private eye.
And, yeah, you mentioned the writing, and I just love the writing in this movie. It's so smart because they use it so effectively to establish the different characters. Like when they're introducing all the characters and they're introducing Benoit Blanc, they're showing the Toni Collette character. And she says, I read a Twitter headline about a New Yorker article about you.
Yes.
And then it cuts to Jamie Lee Curtis, who talks about reading the New Yorker article about him. And that tells you so much about those two characters in and of themselves, while also introducing Benoit Blanc as a really famous, renowned private detective.
Yeah, well, also, you know, he is kind of in the background, not talking, except he occasionally hits a note on the piano.
To
steer the interview, because each of the family members are being interviewed one at a time. And you're cutting back. They're telling the story. Again, a very clever way of storytelling. They're cutting between all of these characters to give us the story. But I love the way also when each of them ask who the hell Daniel Craig is, and the way they ask that question also says a lot about them. You know, like Jamie Lee Curtis' character is like, I'm sorry, and who are you? Know, I think what Toni Collette is like. It's like, and I'm just got a question, like who are you? You know, and Jamie Lee Curtis is much more assertive, but still very polite. And Don Johnson's like, who the fuck is this guy? Just pretty fun. And then the other character who I've not yet introduced is the Harlan's caretaker, Marta Cabrera, who's played by Ana de Armas. And we know her from...
Well, I don't know what I know her from, but she's in another Daniel Craig movie.
Is she going to be a Bond person?
She is.
Oh, excellent.
I saw her in a Keanu Reeves movie called Knock Knock.
Sorry.
Have I seen that? I may have seen that movie.
It seems like a movie you would have seen.
Ah, okay. She was great, though.
Yeah,
and I love that.
Oh, she was in Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, that's right.
Is that a good movie?
I haven't seen it yet.
Me either.
Was it? Okay. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, don't tell us. Yeah.
That movie, I believe, is great.
Ah, we should add that to the list.
I have it. Boyfriend Jesse and I are still needing to watch it, so we'll probably watch it tomorrow. So when was the last time you watched Blade Runner?
I watched it almost right before I watched Blade Runner 2049.
Because it still holds up really well.
It does, but it's so slow.
I was going to say, the last time I tried to watch it, it was so slow.
And it's uncomfortable to watch. Because it's so weird, and like all the weird Daryl Hannah stuff, and it's good. It's just, not a very fun movie to watch.
No.
Yeah, and so this is again a failing of me, but it turns out I don't know if I'm a big fan of like slow, thinky sci-fi. I think I want big, splashy sci-fi, but oh well.
All right. Next week we're gonna do the Annihilation and Arrival double cast.
Well, okay. So see those are examples that disprove my theory because I like both of those movies, although they're both sci-fi and weird
and slow and thinky.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know.
It's kind of like you don't like musicals except you do.
Oh, but
you don't like period pieces except you do.
Well, okay, I'm still going to say I don't like period pieces.
Except that you totally do.
Well, yeah.
The period pieces that we have watched, you have statistically liked a more than a few.
Well, maybe that just says we pick really good movies to watch.
That's what I'm going to go with. But again, turns out my taste is all over the place. Who knows what I'm going to like? And you know, it's also a mood-based thing. Like this movie is great. Because it's tells a fun story. It's twisty, it's turny. I'm actually anxious to see it again at some future date because I'm sure it will hold up to repeated viewings because it's just clever.
I'm also pretty sure I've missed a whole bunch of stuff. I bet there's so much more here.
I mean, yeah,
just because it's so nuanced. There's layers.
Yeah, it's super dense.
Yeah, I watched it. I actually watched this movie with my wife. She was interested in watching it. Doesn't happen very much when I'm watching movies for the podcast.
What did she
see? Also, all of the Fast and Furious movies. She loved it. But also, since we only have an opportunity to watch something together at the very end of the day, she tends to fall asleep when we're watching stuff. And I did not stop. So I watched it. And then the next night, we finished it up. So I watched most of this movie twice.
Oh, sweet.
And the end three times.
Excellent.
And yeah, repeated viewings is awesome.
Yeah.
I want to go back and watch it with the commentary track because the commentary track is the director and the dude who plays Trooper Wagner.
Oh, that's funny. So back to Marta, the caretaker. She's a young Latinx woman. And we don't quite know where she's from, except she's not from America because her mother's an illegal alien, because each member of the family describes her as being from some other South American country.
Don Johnson is like, he does the best job at being a racist asshole.
Oh, it's great.
Because he acts in the scene where he acts like he's defending her and then he like offhandedly gives her his plate.
Exactly. Yeah.
See, but that's the kind of subtlety. I mean, that's again, the layers. That's why I think this is a great movie, is because there's so much in it that went into it. It's not just the dialogue and the acting, but it's the whole, like the settings are as much as a character, as the objects, as the actors are. So.
Did you guys look at any of the trivia?
No, not yet.
I believe this because it's really funny. There's a line later in the movie when all the family is kind of screaming at Marta. And the Nazi kid calls her an anchor baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the trivia is that while they're all that was an ad lib by that kid.
Oh God.
And it got when they're shooting it, they got kind of lost in the you know cacophony of everybody shouting. But Michael Shannon heard it and he thought it was so funny that he recommended to Ryan Johnson that they reshoot that scene and give that a bit more volume.
Oh, that's hilarious. And by the way, Michael Shannon was doing a little bit of Michael Shannoning. I mean, he had a beard and a limp and everything, and yet he was still great. I mean, he didn't, he was Michael Shannoning. He was not Willem Dafoeing.
So, in housekeeping, remind me to tell you about a Willem Dafoe movie that destroyed my family.
Okay, excellent. We've gone through all the characters. So we are really going to spoil this then?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, we're what, a half hour into it? We can give people a final warning.
Yeah,
we're going to spoil the movie.
Yes. Yes.
It is a mystery.
It is a mystery.
Do not listen to this if you haven't watched the movie.
Yeah.
I cannot save you from yourself at this point.
Yeah. And so, and I'm going to tell it in a linear fashion that is not the way it's told in the movie. It's told very artfully in the movie, going back and forth in time and through different characters' views. By the way, at any point, did you think maybe Harlan wasn't really dead?
Yes.
Me too. Even though I knew, I mean, I had the inner monologue that said, sorry, I never let Jason finish. I'm going to continue to talk though. This inner monologue, the inner dialogue, I guess that goes, I bet you he's not really dead. And it's like, wait, hold on. He's clearly dead in the first part of the movie. There's splatter and everything, or spatter. Anyway, so sorry, Jason. Did you think he was dead? Not dead, maybe?
I didn't think he was dead. I thought he was pulling a Lionel Twain.
Yes.
But I really thought that he had offed himself just to fuck everybody over in the family. That's the total middle finger. Because he had such a decisive plot on how to get Marta to progress through the end of this. It seemed very premeditated on his part. Like, he knew everything to do. Of course, they kept establishing that he was just, you know, the plots to his books would just appear entirely in his head in one cohesive single unit.
And it also kept being reinforced that he fuck with people.
Like, yeah.
He communicated through games and Harlan's caretaker. Oh, by the way, did you think that Harlan was sleeping with Marta?
I didn't think that Harlan was sleeping with Marta, but at one point I thought that maybe Marta had set the whole thing up for real.
Ah, okay. So Marta's is very young, and Harlan's 85. But Harlan is Christopher Plummer, so he's fucking charming as hell. And other than Marta, the basically personal care attendant or whatever, nurse, and Fran, the housekeeper, everybody else is pretty much family. But they keep saying that Marta's just like family. You know, she's almost like part of the family. Of course, when it comes down to the will and everything, they don't really think of her as part of the family. She's simply an employee. Anyway, so what happened after the party, we find out that Marta took Harlan upstairs to give him his nightly medication. And they end up playing their nightly game of Go. And Harlan jokingly knocks the board off the table before Marta can give him his medication. And Harlan is a little bit drunk, and Marta's a little bit frustrated. So she picks up his medicines and injects him with his nightly meds as they're having a conversation and playing Go. But she accidentally gives him, instead of 100 milligrams of some sort of medication and then 3 milligrams of morphine, she accidentally gives him 100 milligrams of morphine. So she is freaking out and explains, oh, this is a bad mistake I made, but if I can get you this basically what, Narcan, right?
Yeah, naloxone.
Yeah. If I give this to you within 10 minutes, will you be fine? If I don't, you are going to be dead. But then, of course, she can't find the
naloxone.
Yeah. So he said, he is very calm during this whole thing. He's like, so you're saying that I have 10 minutes and it will take at least 15 minutes for help to arrive. And if you don't find the naloxone, I'm dead. So, but we don't want you to get blamed for this. So here's what you do. And he gives her this crazy thriller novel solution to the problem, which is he kills himself slashing his own throat, and she leaves the house to give herself an alibi, and then has to climb back in through the trellis to go in this hidden window, blah blah blah, to establish she dresses up in his clothes and walks down the stairs, and to establish that he's still seen alive after she's left, so she has an alibi. And so that's the solution to the problem. And of course Marta is a good person, so she is freaked the fuck out. Also, her character has a trait that I want to know how Rian Johnson came up with this trait. But and do you have it written down what Daniel Craig introduces this trait as, the phrase he uses?
No.
Nope.
It's something about how she has a regurgitative reaction to telling the lie.
Yeah.
So, and which means if she tells a lie, she throws up. Which is pretty funny. Also, it makes her like the only credible witness. Like he knows when she's lying.
Yeah, her tell isn't as much of a tell as it is a reaction.
It's an eruption. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and people treat her when they find this out. They treat her the same way that like people treat me when they find out I'm colorblind. They just like keep picking at that scab to see it again.
I did tell you once when I had an eye test at the eye doctor, at the actual eye doctor, right? Not an optometrist, ophthalmologist. And they had me run through as an adult, the colorblind test. And I couldn't read some of the numbers that were, you know. And she's like, okay, read this one. Yeah, read this one. And I said the number. And she goes, okay, you sure? Like, as if this were something that had never happened in her experience. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. I'm colorblind. I told you I was colorblind. It's not everything. It's not super bad. But yeah, I'm going to see 71 instead of 12, and fuck you. No one has ever picked that scab for me. Although people who are not colorblind have no idea what colorblindness really is.
No.
So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Are all three of us colorblind?
Well, yeah, sounds like it.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Which, by the way...
All red green?
Yeah.
No, I'm blue green.
Well, it's funny. I'm red green colorblind, but the only colors I have trouble with are purples and blues.
Yeah. See, I can't differentiate blues and greens if it's the only thing I can see. If I can see other colors around the blue and green, I can kind of, by comparison, tell what the color it is. But if you put a blue and a green right next to it, especially if it's an off shade, I got nothing. Like, I got nothing.
Well, so here, I'm going to mansplain to our listeners. If you're not colorblind, let me explain how colorblindness works, okay? Everything that we experience is completely arbitrary. No one sees or hears. Any sounds are just interpretations. Nobody hears the same sound the same way. Nobody sees anything the same way. Nobody smells the thing the same way. It's all a fucking fiction. Okay. However, somewhere long ago, they came up with this color spectrum, and you can put colors in order, right? You go from, you know, it's a Roy G. Biv thing. So let's imagine you had 100 blocks that were each a color, and they go through the whole spectrum, right? So the way colorblindness works is most people would be able to take the blocks and put them in order, and except for maybe a few little things here or there, it would look exactly like a rainbow, right? Because it's a pretty simple test. However, if you're colorblind, your blocks are considered by people that are not colorblind to be out of order. Like something that you would describe as blue, I would describe as purple. Now, I can tell you what purple is compared to blue if Jason said it was on like a rainbow. But if you give me several shades of purple and several shades of blue, I went for my favorite trainers last day at work. We were allowed to wear jeans and we were allowed to wear purple. And I wore a blue shirt because I thought it was purple. And I was like, fuck you all. color is a lie. It's all an illusion. Yeah, anyway, nothing is real. We're in a, it's not a simulation. It's just fucking, everything is experiential. There are no absolutes. There is no foundation. It's all just your experience.
So you've had a little bit of difficulty with this, huh?
when you're colorblind, it's amazing. That's, you realize how much of what you decide color is based on context.
Yeah, true. Well, and I think a friend of mine and listener, actually, her husband is colorblind to the extent that where most people think the color blindness is who don't have it, meaning you can't distinguish colors at all. Like everything is black and white. Like that's not the case. But, you know, depending on the severity of it, yeah, you could have problems with like pretty fundamental problems with colors. And actually that's why if you had a certain color blindness, you can't be a pilot because it becomes very crucial to determine the difference between a red light and a green light.
Well, blue and green light too. Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to land on a taxiway?
Yeah, I was going to say not to pour salt in your wound, but
yeah, no, you know. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah,
no, that's why I couldn't become a pilot because I can't in an emergency. I couldn't look at an indicator and know if it was blue or green. I wouldn't be able to.
But anyway, yeah. So anyway,
yeah. Derek and I used to have fights all the time because he was completely colorblind, He would ask me, and I'd be like, "Don't ask me. Like, I can't reference it any better for you than you can reference it for yourself." And so he would want me to pick paint colors, and I'm like, "I'm not the person. You need to ask somebody at the paint store. Like, I am not reliable." Yeah. So,
I mean, you can tell him what you like.
Yes.
Yeah, but you can't tell him. I'm gonna just go get me some seafoam green because you don't know what that's gonna look like when you come.
Well, back. He would always want me to match something, and I'm like, I can't.
It all matches
exactly. Yeah, I can't.
Like
our grandfather, like they had he had to have they would sew a piece of or put a piece of yarn in his socks to determine which socks were brown and which ones were black because he couldn't really distinguish them, at least in a hurry.
Yeah,
but if in the toe of the black ones that had a yellow piece of yarn, you're good to go.
How clever!
Yeah,
and then they would mix them up when they were mad at him.
Yeah, I don't know.
Moving on.
So this is this weird thing where he killed himself, but to save Marta from being accused of killing him, and it's not even because she wouldn't be accused of murder. It'd just be medical malpractice. However, the investigation would reveal that her mother was an illegal alien and would be deported, and it would be a horrible thing with the family, blah, blah, blah.
And also what Harlan knew at this point that Marta did not is she had like a $16 million motive for killing him.
Yeah, because we find out through the course of the questioning, he had basically cut off all four branches of the family's money because they were, he thought maybe he had done them all a disservice by not letting them build something on their own from the ground up. So he basically was cutting everybody out.
He was kicking them all out of the nest, as it were.
Yeah. Well, okay. He was kicking them all in the nest. And so everybody had a motive. I mean, he was basically going to tell Jamie Lee Curtis that Don Johnson was cheating on her. He found out that Toni Collette had been
double dipping.
He was paying for the college education of her daughter, but he was double billing it. She was double billing it. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Ransom was just a ne'er-do-well who didn't have any job. Just was basically a leech. And they had a contentious relationship. They used to fight a lot, argue a lot.
Yeah, he wasn't just a sponge. He was also an asshole.
Yes, exactly. A self-entitled, punchable-face asshole. Yeah, and then, but worst of all, really, is poor Walter. Walter was being fired as the publisher of the head of the publishing company. So he has a pretty strong motive. Because if he kills his dad, then he could actually, you know, sell all the screen rights or whatever to the novels like he wished he could. And of course, Harlan is kind of an ass too, because he's very blunt with people. Like when Walter's like, you know, we'll take our books and we'll do this. He's like, well, you know, really, they're not our books. They're my books. And I have a very specific idea of what I'm going to do with them. And, you know, you should probably get a job on your own. Yeah, so we have a dead Harlan. And we have Marta, who is kind of the character that we're rooting for. But suddenly we figure out she's got maybe something to do with his death. Well, a lot to do with his death. And then that's where the little twists and turns start to happen. And the grieving family then meets to have the will read. And who was the attorney that was reading the will?
Yoda.
Yes, and Miss Piggy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Frank Oz.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah. I saw him in the cast list. I didn't recognize him as such. I think the last time I recognized Frank Oz in the movie was when he was in American Werewolf in London.
That's such an odd casting choice. Like,
he's an actor, though. I mean,
yeah, but where did that come from?
Blues Brothers and stuff.
Must be Friends. Somebody.
Well, he did recently work with Rian Johnson.
Being Yoda and whatever?
Yes.
Ah, gotcha.
So we have this a couple of fun things happening. We have Marta, who has to kind of keep Mr. Blanc.
He enlists her as his Watson, is what he keeps calling her.
Yeah, because she actually is the only trustworthy person he's talking to, because she'll vomit every time she tells a lie. So he deputizes her as his assistant, not realizing that she is, ostensibly not realizing that she's like center of this whole mystery. Also, Blanc doesn't know who hired him. Somebody gave him an envelope of cash to investigate this. He has no idea who it is, so he has to figure out that mystery as well. So when the will is read, Harlan left everything to Marta, which does not make the family happy. And it freaks the crap out of Marta too, because she is just as surprised as they are.
Chris Evans is so great in this movie.
Yes.
Because before they're going to read the will, he's barely in the movie except for just a flash of him leaving the birthday party. But when he shows up and he's so smarmy and he's so hateable and just so counter to being Captain America.
Oh, yeah.
He's so great.
I think he was wearing mascara.
But he's still like very handsome and charismatic.
Yeah, he still looks like Captain America.
So even when he's acting like an asshole, and then if he does something just like vaguely nice, it's so easy to think, oh, he's actually a good guy.
Which is just what the movie wants you to think.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are alliances made based on a foundation of lies, just like color.
I apologize. I didn't mean to bring up such past trauma.
I was going
to
say, whose scab got picked?
Anyway, that's why I like Lovecraft fiction. I mean, you kind of have to overlook a lot of racism and misogyny. misanthropy as well. But the idea that everything we know, none of it is real, is very appealing to me, based on my experience with color. Also, lately, maybe my experience with money, depending on how our retirement accounts go. It's all just an illusion. Wink and a handshake. Just like the difference between blue and purple. I digress. So now Martin's really...
A wink is as good as a nod to a blind man.
There you go. Yes. At night, all cats are gray. What? So Harlan left everything to Marta. The family is super upset. And they assure Marta that they'll treat her right, but this is simply an error that has to be corrected. Like, there's no way in hell. And also, maybe, get out of our house, our ancestral home. Which is, I think, also a funny thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because we find out that their ancestral home was bought in 1985 by like a Pakistani real estate agent or something.
Yes.
So, pretty funny. So, everybody's freaking out. But Ransom helps her escape because she just wants to get out of the situation and clear her head. And she can't because her car, her like Honda Fit or something she's driving. I can't remember what it is.
No, it's a Hyundai.
Oh, okay. Hyundai, yeah. Yeah. it's not a good...
Don't besmirch Honda.
So, well, yeah, I would say this is... It's not really a ringing endorsement of the Hyundai. Since they have a police chase where she can't get over like 60 miles an hour. It's kind of funny. Ransom tells her to go with him in his BMW or Mercedes or whatever he's driving.
So I guess the implication is that in retrospect, he must have sabotaged her car.
Possibly. That would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll have to go back and see if that was the case. So Marta and Ransom, because, you know, Ransom's the black sheep of the family, and now Marta is running from the family. So they have something in common. So they go to a strange restaurant where she eats but beans and toast and drinks beer. And okay. I love the fact
that he has to wait just for an extra bowl. English or Irish pub.
Must be, yeah. But I love the fact that in the establishing shot of the restaurant, he asked the waitress for an extra bowl. And you only realize after their conversation starts why he wants the bowl, because he's going to grill her.
When he just plunks it down in front of her. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And then I was like, oh, that's kind of genius.
Oh, no. When I saw the bowl on the table, I'm like, oh, yeah. Here it comes.
See, I didn't
know it at first. Dots. I knew it was important, but once they started talking and he took her plate away, I'm like, oh, this is why the bowl's there. This is why the bowl's there. I'm so happy that the bowl is there. You know, it's Chekhov's bowl. So Ransom wants to help her, and so Ransom grills her, and she decides she's going to spill the whole story to Ransom.
Well, so to speak.
Yeah. So he is
nice.
Yeah. So he decides he's like, well, you know what? I'm sympathetic to you. I'll help you. We just have to hide the evidence. That way, I won't tell my family. Oh, and by the way, you'll take care of me. You know, give me my share of it. But this way, we'll solve the rest of the problem. And she's like, okay. Because she's fallen for his line of bullshit, because he's Captain America with a punchable face. Anyway, meanwhile, the family members realize that due to what do they call it? The Skinner rule or something?
The Slayer rule.
Something like that, yeah. That they Googled, that the Nazi kid Googled, right? Mm-hmm. That if they could prove, even in civil court, that Marta is a murderer, murders the person with the will, she can't be the recipient of the inheritance. So suddenly they don't want it seen as a suicide. They want it seen as a murder, and that would get them all their money back. So they insist that the investigation, the murder investigation, continue. And LeBlanc confirms his suspicion of foul play. And then Marta gets a ransom note that says, I know what you did, along with the top part of the toxicology report and the nurse, the like tag on from her medicine bag that has disappeared from the crime scene. Dun, dun, dun. So Marta drives Ransom to the medical examiner's office to find out that it is in flames. It has been burnt to the ground or whatever, so that there is no original copy of the toxicology report or any of the blood or whatever. And Marta checks her email at Ransom's insistence to see if the, cause he can't understand why she gets this note, but doesn't say to go to a particular place at a particular time or ask for a particular amount of money. But he says, well, didn't the person send you like another letter or an email or something? And turns out there's an email that gives a time and a place. So while they're talking about this and checking the email, they're actually sitting like at a side road near the still on fire medical examiner's office. Mm-hmm. And that's when Benny Blanc sees her, and they peel out, drive away, and then they're suddenly chased again. This is the chase we were talking about where they couldn't get over 60 miles an hour. During the chase, Blanc's car just pulls up right next to her and says, you know, answer my phone. By the way, I love that Marta has a cracked cell phone. like a cell phone with a smashed
front. Yes. It's a very nice touch.
Yeah. Also establishes her as not having a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
So they eventually pull over Marta after some pretty fun driving. I mean, you know, it's not James Bond level, but it's kind of fun. Marta, this whole time, she assumes she's on the verge of getting caught, so that's a fun part of the story. But of course, instead, they arrest Ransom and take him away, and they're going to take Marta along, or Blanc is going to take Marta along, or actually, Marta is going to drive Blanc to the police station. Marta looks at the LED clock on the Hyundai and sees that she's approaching the ransom time or whatever. And so she asked Blanc if they could pull over, she could run a quick errand. He's like, yeah, sure. And then he puts in his headphones, we find out. He puts in his headphones and is singing along with the song on his phone, which I think is great.
Like some musical, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's bizarre.
It's a show tune, for sure.
They mentioned Hamilton earlier.
Oh, my God. They did mention Hamilton earlier. It's hilarious.
There's lots of little nuggets in
most,
this movie.
In the most, like, dickish way.
So Marta goes and she goes into this, like, what, abandoned or vacant former laundromat and sees somebody sitting in a chair. And who is it? But it's Fran. But Fran's got a spider crawling across her face.
Because, yeah, what the fuck was that?
Because it turns out she's been pumped full of morphine.
But why the spider?
Because it proves that she's not in her right mind, or she may be dead.
Well, it's an awesome visual, and I think it was shot specifically for the trailer.
Oh, maybe, yeah. So, Marta sees that it's Ace. Fran is the person that's trying to blackmail her. And as Fran is collapsed on the floor, she manages to croak out, you did this. And then it's like,
it's so dumb.
Yeah, it is. well, turns out. But Marta, again, Marta's a good person. So she just can't run away and leave her dead. She instead starts CPR and calls 911, and they get an ambulance arrives, much to the surprise of Private Eye Blanc. And they, Fran gets taken to the hospital, and Marta just spills the beans, tells Blanc everything. And so.
Yeah, so then they're going to go reveal it to the family.
Yes. So, she insists on revealing to the family. And Blanc's like, well, okay, but we'll get a police escort to me, you know, whatever. And she assumes she's going to be arrested right after she reveals to the family. But she owes it to the family to tell them the truth. And so she goes out there and prepares to confess everything. Oh, by the way, they figure out there's another copy of the toxicology report, but they don't know where it is. Well, we found out earlier where Fran's secret stash hiding place is. So Marta knew where the toxicology report was. And
Fran gives out so much information early in this movie.
Yeah. Oh,
especially when she's talking about the Danica McKellar movie.
Yes, yes. And her friend. Oh, it's great. Again, the writing is brilliant. So Marta reveals everything to Blanc, and they find the toxicology report. And while she's starting this whole confession, Blanc is looking at the toxicology report and then stops her from confessing, and instead tells the family that no, they have not always treated her like a member of the family. They have treated her like shit. And so he is going to tell the world that this is all a suicide.
Vultures at the feast, knives out, beaks bloody.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Yeah. Also a good way to call out the movie title. Love it.
Yes. They say the name of the movie in the movie. It's always awesome.
Yes.
And Don Johnson's reaction is one of the funniest things in the whole movie. He's just like deadpan. He's like, that did not go the way I expected.
Yes. So the police bring Ransom to the house and place him in a private room where Blanc and Marta are waiting. And Blanc reveals what he had deduced about the night of the murder. And this is like a real Agatha Christie type ending, where there's a lot of stuff going on here. But it all tracks. Again, this is where multiple viewings is probably worthwhile, because I think it probably all matches up. Where even though Marta climbed up the trestle or whatever,
so did
what's a trestle? That's a train thing, right? A
bridge. Correct.
Okay. Yes. So turns out
I think it's a lock of hair.
Don't understand that joke, but I'm going to let it be.
You'll get it later.
Okay. All right. So, this is a color joke. Come on, people. So, Ransom stormed out after discovering Marta's inheritance that night. Turns out Ransom knew all along that Marta was going to get the estate, because Harlan had told him that. So he actually went up and changed the label, or so he didn't change the labels. He actually extracted, or what is it? What do you call it? Not injecting. What's the opposite of injecting?
Withdrew.
Okay.
He drew up the contents.
I'm sorry. He drew up the contents of the morphine and put it in the other bottle, blah, blah, blah. So the bottles were swapped. So he basically set up Marta to do the overdose. But the problem with this is, of course, the sad part of the whole story is that, as it turns out, because Marta screwed up the bottles, even though she thought she gave Harlan a fatal overdose and Harlan thought he was given a fatal overdose, she did not give him a fatal overdose. She ended up giving them the correct amounts of medication. He would have been fine had he not had that brilliant thriller writer brain that led him to cut his own throat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Turns out he's not going to appear at the end of this movie in a Lionel Twain way.
He does a little bit in the portrait, right?
Well, a little bit, yeah. We find out that Ransom, who we had previously known, he had missed the funeral. It's because he was busy in the house getting the bag of medication, but he was discovered by Fran, blah, blah, blah. Fran sent Ransom that letter about, I know what you did, but Ransom modified the letter, took Fran
Ransom
hostage.
Also hired
yes,
Benoit Blanc.
Exactly, because when he found out that it was listed as a suicide, he hired Blanc, and then that way he could be a murder thing, and because of the Slayer rule, blah, blah, blah.
My favorite thing throughout this whole reveal at the end is Trooper Wagner just like fanboying out in the background.
Yeah, oh, it's great.
He is so funny.
He is. Yeah. Oh, both, you know, it's funny. Both of the cops are sort of funny in a very subtle way. Well, it's okay. It's not subtle, but
nuanced.
Yeah. Just they weren't complete last house on the left, you know, like deputy dog doofuses. So blah, blah, blah. Ransom's the killer. He confesses at the end, like it was a Bond movie. And then grabs a knife from the weird knife display.
Well, he thinks he's going to get off because Fran's not dead, because Marta said the hospital called.
Yeah, the hospital calls on Marta's cracked phone. And she says that the hospital says, she's going to make it. So he's like, yeah. Cool. You know, so you still killed my father. And worst case, like I assaulted Fran or whatever, but I'll get a great lawyer. At which point we find out that Marta was lying about the call from the hospital, because
she technicolor yawns all over his face.
Yes. Very satisfying. So when he realizes that the jig is up, he grabs a knife, tries to stab Marta, only to find that the setup before, where Harlan had described Ransom to Marta as a reckless guy who didn't know the difference between a real knife and a theater knife, or whatever it's called.
A prop knife.
Prop knife, yeah. Because, of course, he tries to stab her with a prop knife.
In kind of comedic effect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's so funny when he's lying on top of her. Like, just doing the knife again and again. He's like, well, shit.
Yeah. So they arrest Ransom. And as they're taking Ransom out, Marta ends up going to like the widow's walk or balcony or whatever it is up there atop, as the rest of the family is in the driveway. And as Ransom is being put in the car, the cop car. The family kind of looks up at Marta, who in the best visual of any movie I've seen in 2019, or sorry, 2020 so far, she's drinking from the my house, my rules, my coffee cup.
Yeah, that was genius.
Which is perfect.
But her fingers are covering up everything but my house.
Yes, yeah. It's great. So, fade to black.
This is after it's revealed that Jamie Lee Curtis deciphered the invisible ink note that Harlan left her about her husband cheating on her.
Yes. That the husband thought was just a joke.
Mm-hmm. Also, I left out the whole character of what, the Gray Nana. Yeah.
How old is she? Nobody fucking knows.
Exactly. The family remind me of the family on the Father's Day Bard of Creepshow in the most fun way. Mm-hmm. And I loved the performances, especially Toni Collette. And all of them. Daniel Craig was great. Jamie Lee Curtis is always great. I think I mentioned this at the top of my opinion. Loved it.
Ana de Armas was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's a star. Yeah. So, Brother Jay, do you have notes?
No. I wrote down a couple things, but most of it we talked about. You know, the opening of the movie with the stair scene where they're going up the stairs, and I'm like, this is the Clue house. It very much had that.
Yeah. All that Clue, Murder by Death.
Yeah.
It was Death Trap, all of those.
And then I wrote down, like, Don Johnson, holy crap. One of the other things that I wrote down that I thought was funny was they're talking about Irish courage. So,
yeah.
And you did notice the portrait at the end. He's smiling.
With the knife.
Was he not smiling in the portrait before?
No, it was more like a stoic kind of scowl.
Yeah, but he's holding the knife that he killed himself with. It's all very complicated. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, Knives Out 2 is going to be great.
Do we want a Knives Out 2?
I don't know. I guess not. Although, it'd be fun to see more Detective Blanc movies.
I think that's what it would be. He's working on it. He's working on it.
Well
he's got to do something after the Bond franchise, right?
Well, are we ever going to see another movie out again? Never.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, right now, you can't even shoot a one-act play. So, anyway, yeah. So, Drew, any notes for you?
Oh, I think we covered it.
Okay, so, Brother Jay, your verdict?
Yeah. This is an A movie. First of all, it's got A-list stars in it. It's superb writing. It's visually stunning. It has all the hallmarks of everything that we love about a movie. So this is a movie that is, I suspect, infinitely rewatchable, especially because of just the richness of the story. So I'm looking forward to watching it again.
True. Was it worth it?
So last week when I was out here in Willow for a while, we try and kind of watch a family movie, either over a couple nights or all in one night if we start it early enough. And we try and let the girls pick something that is, you know, more suitable than a cartoon, but still a kids movie. And last week they picked Freaky Friday with Lindsay Lohan. Not the original.
Oh, dear.
The one with Jamie Lee Curtis. Lindsay Lohan and Jamie Lee Curtis. And Knives Out is so good that it made me forgive Jamie Lee Curtis for that movie. This movie is definitely worth your time. You should watch it at least twice, if not three times.
Sweet. Yep, I agree. It was great. Thank you guys for pushing it ahead in the calendar.
And go buy it. Go buy it. Support this movie.
Yeah,
I bought it.
I did too. It's an original movie. It's completely original. It's not based on anything else. Great ensemble cast. Support this kind of movie.
Agreed. By the way, just reminds me, so we put out the Outbreak Contagion episode last week. I just decided to throw it on there because, you know, it was timely. Here's my I don't usually go back and listen to our old podcasts, of course.
Oh, I do.
But I wanted to see if we had done right by, you know, both movies, or were done right by the actual idea of a pandemic. And I was impressed by a couple things. One, I was impressed by the fact that we didn't really talk about the plot of Outbreak at all. Yeah, we went through the
plot. No need. That movie is trash.
Okay, so the other thing I thought was, by the way, I thought, you know, talking about Contagion, we actually hit all the high points of pandemic stuff. We talked about social distancing and how kids have a problem with it. It was great. And then I remembered this little touch. When I asked you your verdict, we have a gavel sound, which I thought,
yes,
I missed that. So we may hear the gavel come back because it was kind of fun. We got rid of a lot of the sticky stuff. Well, not all of it, but...
I sometimes also miss the old open. So.
Yeah, me too. I still think we should do an improvised musical song for the open. Have you listened to Off Book, the improvised musical podcast?
No.
No.
It's great. Journey loves it, but she hates when I sing. So we will listen to it in the car, and we'll both want to like sing or make up a song because that improv songs are fun. But as soon as I start getting into it, she does not like it at all. Like, okay, all right, Drew.
That's rude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, coming from you. Yeah. Anyway.
She chew on something really loud.
Anyway, so well done on Outbreak and Contagion. And are we on to housekeeping?
Yeah.
Okay. No housekeeping for anybody. It's pretty much a normal week.
Yeah. Nothing really going on.
Yeah. Well, I'll start. Nothing's really going on with me, really. I mean, I wish I could say this was... basically, I'm the only one who goes shopping now, which is different, but not completely unheard of. And went back to work. Was happy to go back to work because it means I'm not in front of the TV all the time. But... like I said before, my job really hasn't changed, you know. And so in Anchorage, Alaska, still kind of hard to find toilet paper. I mean, you can find it at Costco, depending on when you go there. I still haven't seen it at like Walmart in a while. Fred's had some, but as long as you have enough toilet paper and soup at home, you're pretty much going to be fine. Everything else is in ample supply. I mean, if they start running out of Easter candy, I'll be really worried, but... because you know what? Global pandemic is not the time to diet.
they got things like milk and stuff, okay?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, nice.
I mean, milk and eggs. You know, yeah, sometimes there's not, like, all of the varieties, but you can certainly get at least 2% and probably whole milk pretty easy, and the rest of it's... seems to be fine. We haven't ever, like today I went to grocery shopping and except for, they actually had a couple of kinds of soup. I didn't have anything like paper products on my list because we already did that last week and everything else was fine. I mean, there's no shortage of meat or produce or anything. Weird stuff like people buy chicken tenders for some reason. But you can buy other kinds of chicken. You can make your own. You can buy like frozen or not, like fresh chicken tenders, just not the pre-breaded ones that are processed and probably worse for you anyway. Yeah. Everybody's spraying stuff down with bleach. Although I told you to remind me about at work, our janitorial contractor, for years probably, has just been adding water to our soap when they clean the bathrooms. So they're just diluting our like hand soap because we actually have soap dispensers on the wall, but for some reason they're not being used. So they just bring in like a bottle, like a pump bottle of soap, like you would have at your own home. And mm-hmm. they just open it up and put some water in it and call it full. During a global pandemic is not the proper method. Although we have plenty of hand sanitizer stations around. So at least for now, there are plenty. That's it, I think, for me. Who wants to go next?
I go next. I have a few things. Eric, did you watch American Ultra?
I did not, but I loved the podcast.
You need to watch it.
Yeah. No, I want to watch it.
You should watch it.
Yeah.
It was great. When you ask what kind of monster is going to listen to a podcast where they talk about a movie without actually having seen the movie first? Oh, that was me. I mean, granted, editing it. But
no, the monster is the one who gets upset about getting spoiled. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. You're right. Yeah. No, I was happy to have it spoiled, and actually I was happy that it was a good movie.
Yeah, you should watch it. Another movie I watched. One thing that Jason and I did not talk about because I was a little stressed out last week. Yeah, Iditarod. My lake house is right around the corner from almost the very beginning of the Iditarod restart in Willow. So they start in Willow Lake, and then they cross over to another lake called Long Lake. And then from Long Lake, they cross to Crystal Lake. And that crossing between Long Lake and Crystal Lake is about a 15-minute walk from my house. So that day, me and the family and some other guests actually walked down there and watched all the mushers cross and cheered them on and stuff. And it was a beautiful day. It was snowing really heavily that day.
By the way, the Iditarod is like approximately 1,000-mile dog sled race.
Mm-hmm. It's seemingly topical now.
So it was a very fun time. I would encourage you guys to come visit the next time it happens.
Cool.
If you're around and interested. But also, in conjunction with that, there is a movie on Disney Plus right now called Togo, which is about the serum run that inspired the Iditarod race. And really, the premise of the movie is fuck Balto.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
And have either of you seen this movie?
No.
No.
It's got Willem Dafoe as Sepala the Musher.
As Leonard Sepala?
Yeah.
That's a great casting choice.
He's really good.
Yeah.
He's really good. That movie wrecked my family. Like all for different reasons. It's a really good movie. It's done really well. It's very emotional. If you like dogs, it's really going to pull your heartstrings. But my youngest daughter was crying pretty much throughout the entire movie because she was convinced Togo was going to die and she was going to have to watch Togo die. And then by the time the movie ended, my oldest daughter was sobbing pretty much for the rest of the night until she went to sleep. Because she has a very strong sense of justice, and she was so upset that Balto got all the credit and that there is a statue in New York of Balto and not of Togo.
There's a statue in downtown Anchorage.
Yeah, I was going to say the Sunshine Mall.
I do not tell her about that. Yeah, so she wouldn't stop crying. And my wife was crying a little bit just because it's that kind of movie.
Don't let your oldest watch Hair.
No. But yeah, I really recommend that movie. I was surprised by how good it was.
Excellent.
I also rewatched The Thing.
Timely.
It's very, very timely. And my oldest daughter was really interested in that.
Did you let her watch it?
Yeah, you know, I tried not to, but she kept coming in while I was watching it while doing laundry and kind of watching parts of it. I did not let her watch any of the scary parts because turns out my children are really susceptible to suggestion-induced nightmares.
Yeah, that's good to know.
But so she wanted to watch the scary parts. I've told her about them before. Like I told her about the couch scene in The Thing, cause that's one of my favorite scenes in a movie ever.
It is. It's great.
And she wanted to see it and I was like, nope.
No, I can't.
Yeah. No. But she really wanted to watch it. So instead of letting her watch the scary parts, I actually found like a making of,
video on
YouTube.
There's a claymation version on YouTube.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, no, you can, I mean, and it's, you know, it's all the gory, it's except it's because it's clay, it's Play-Doh.
It's cartoony.
Yeah, it's,
yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, I figured if she was going to see one of the scary parts, it may be less traumatic if she saw the behind the scenes stuff first to see how they do it. So she would know it's not real. Except I didn't know this. There's a scene where there's a doctor doing like CPR on yes. a person
uh-huh.
that turns out not to be a person, turns yes. out to be the alien, and the chest opens up mm-hmm. into a mouth.
Yeah.
And then as he's pushing down, so his arms goes down and then the mouth closes and bites off his arms. They hired a paraplegic.
Awesome.
To do that. That's so it was great. A dude who had no arms and they built like jello arms and wax bones. That's still pretty, pretty gory.
Yeah.
Again, you guys haven't seen Swimming to Cambodia, right? Part of the story that he tells, I'll spoil a tiny little bit of it, because the movie is about Spalding Gray, who has a minor role in the movie Swimming to Cambodia, and his adventures while filming the movie, plus his history lesson about what happened in Cambodia and Laos during the Christmas bombings and whatnot. And one of the stories, though, is that he found out that the extras they used for the more intense scenes of, you know, sorry, it's the Killing Fields is the movie he had a role in. During the more intense scenes of the Killing Fields, they paid the extras double or more, rather, depending on the like how many amputations they actually had. Like one leg would get you an extra $50, and if you had both legs amputated, it would get an extra $100. That kind of thing.
That's
casting decisions. That's great.
Morbid is not the right word, but no. It's the equivalent of morbid.
It's morose.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, again, this is the Killing Fields was before CGI,
right?
So unless you wanted to dig a whole bunch of holes and do it dwarf style. And sadly, when you're filming in Thailand, there are plenty of people from Laos and Cambodia who got traumatic injuries due to the war that you have plenty of people to choose from. Swimming to Cambodia. Someday we'll talk about it. I love it. I loved it so much. I recorded the audio from my VHS tape onto a cassette, and I listened to that and Monster in a Box, the one after that. I listened to both of those cassettes until they were bleeding. Each side was bleeding into each other. I loved it. That was like my going to bed, or if there's nothing in the car, this is before podcasts. If there's nothing on the radio and I wasn't in listening to music, I'd put that cassette into the cassette deck in the car. Children's? Oh, who are we kidding? There's no children listening to this. Anyway. Google cassette deck. You'll see. Anyway, that's my housekeeping. Sorry. Wait, hold on. I interrupted your housekeeping with this story.
No, I'm all done.
That's what I do. Dear Brother Jay, housekeeping for the pod?
Yesterday I had a... I don't know why I was on a tear, but... work is crazy right now because pharmacy services have suddenly skyrocketed because everybody wants their medication and a bunch of it right now because they're worried they won't be able to get any. So our pharmacies have been super busy. Clinics themselves by the end of this week have all moved to telemedicine, and they're only having, starting Monday, they're actually dropping from 7 clinics to 4. And they will only be seeing immediate urgent care people face to face. Everything else will be telemedicine. So probably my pharmacies are going to slow down next week, hopefully, but we're going to keep all 7 locations open because, moving stuff between pharmacies is hugely resource intensive and not something easily done. And there's a whole bunch of laws and rules and regulations around all that. So
yeah, safety concerns.
Yeah. So work's been super crazy. I was originally going to be off because mom was going to be here. So I've been off anyway. I kept the time because I get plenty of vacation. And if I don't take it, I lose it. So Even though mom didn't come down, I decided I opted to take the time anyway, because I don't know how much time I'm going to have off in the next couple months at this rate. So taking it off while I can, although technically I worked today for 2 hours and I worked yesterday for 2 hours and I'll probably work Monday for a couple hours. For whatever reason yesterday, I don't know why I was in the mood. I was looking for documentaries to watch. And so I ended up watching the Amazing Jonathan documentary on Hulu by Ben Berman.
Now, is Ben Berman a comedian that hung out with Amazing Jonathan? It was like a friend, sort of?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so because I saw an Amazing Jonathan documentary.
Yeah, where, by the guy who juggles the chainsaws.
Maybe, but the guy that I'm talking about, he would actually make as much money from little bets that Jonathan would bet him, because Jonathan would constantly like make stupid bets with him or give him money for like doing pranks.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a positive, Amazing Jonathan story.
Huh.
And I've heard the other one is not as positive.
Huh.
I mean, the guy himself is not necessarily he was not the nicest guy, and he had some serious problems.
Well, I remember the first time I saw his act, which would have been, 20 years ago. And it was
30 years ago.
Well, I'm old. I can't remember. But, at that time, it was shocking and hilarious.
Oh, great. It's great stuff.
Yeah. But now looking back at it, it just is cringeworthy. But the documentary is, you should definitely watch it. If you know anything about him, you should watch it. Because it will wreck your brain. It is like this strange Möbius strip of a documentary. You can't quite tell where it twists and turns back, and you can't see how it's where it's at. So it's amazing. You should watch it. I don't know that it's, I mean, it's a good documentary, but I don't know. It was difficult to watch. So,
okay. Fair enough.
And then after watching,
but not Dear Zachary difficult.
No. And then after that, for some reason, again, I don't know what was wrong with me last night. Then I decided to watch the Life and Death of Phil Hartman documentary. So
that does not seem like it's going to be, that's not a Knives Out sort of movie.
Yeah, no. So I was like, okay, so today was all about like more uplifting, happy stuff. So, otherwise it's going to be, hopefully quiet. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe rambling. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.